Welcome, everyone. Thanks again for spending a bit of your afternoon with us. I am Teresa Dock with the Office for State, Tribal, Local, and Territorial Support at CDC, and something that each of us must speak with you about today is our personal disclosures related to financial relationships or commercial interest in the area that we're speaking about. And I want to assure you that as of the last 12 months, in fact, ever have I had any. So, no. What I'm going to talk about very briefly, I'm going to speak very broadly and generally about health improvement planning, what the key elements are, and the benefits associated. So you'll hear again from Lindsay and also from Julia far more specifically for communities and states how those are applied and some examples resulting from going through the steps and processes related to health improvement planning. So I want to start first with a definition. The acronym CHIP, SHIP, Community Health Improvement Plan or Planning, State Health Improvement Plan or Planning. This is taken, this definition, from Healthy People 2020, FAB, and Performance Standards. So these are the very similar themes that are used in each of those areas to define what community health improvement planning is. And very key is it's a long-term systematic effort to address public health problems. It is very much based on the assessment of the community or state health, so it's based on an assessment process and involving community input. So those two big pieces, the assessment and the community input, the community involvement, are the foundation pieces which we're looking within this definition to see a plan emerge from. So this is the steps that take us through that process, the assessment and the community involvement piece. So the first bullet here, define the community, engage members and stakeholders, really the first step, but not something that stops as a first step. It's not something that's done once and then you check it off the list and move through a linear process. The involvement of community, the engagement of community stakeholders, no matter what process or model you're using for community or state health improvement planning, this is an ongoing part of the process. So the reaching out to community, identifying, engaging new stakeholders is something that does happen perhaps to launch the process, but it's something that happens continuously. So that is a key component. Bullets 2 and 3 really get to the assessment, get to the gathering of data, data collection, and then interpreting and summarizing that data so that we can describe the health status of the community. But beyond that, what are the assets and resources that also exist that make sort of the complete picture of health status and resources in a community? And bullets 4 through 7 here get to what I want to consider the purpose of community health improvement planning in the first place. So with the community involvement and with the assessment, really the point is to get to identifying health priorities, to developing strategies and plans to address them, and then implementing those strategies and plans, and having some measures and systems in place to document and communicate the results of the process. So just a loose framework here. Julia and Lindsay will talk more specifically about frameworks that can be applied. I think you'll find we might use a little bit different language, but pretty consistently we're talking about a process that's very similar. Some processes may have 4 steps with all these pieces woven in. Others may have 11 or 15, but these pieces of engaging the community, assessing, and then developing and implementing and monitoring plans are all part of the framework. So this is taken, this particular slide adapted from the FAB Standards and Measures version 1, so those that were released just this past July for the purposes of public health agency accreditation. What does it have to say about the process that a community health improvement plan or a state health improvement plan must go through. So the first is that there's a broad participation of partners, so it's definitely not a single entity, such as the health department that's undertaking the process, nor is it two entities working together, a hospital and a school system, for example, but it is really broadly a participation of the many entities in the community that in some way have a stake in the public health or contribute to public health services. So it's going to incorporate a variety of information, certainly health status information, but also information from the community and public health stakeholders about what's important to them, what they see as key issues, key assets, key areas to pay attention to. So that becomes incorporated into one of the inputs into the planning process. An established set of priority health issues will emerge as part of that process that has involved the community stakeholders. FAB notes that using a framework such as MAP, the performance standards, APEX, that these are frameworks that will get you through this kind of process. FAB is very careful not to suggest that there is one framework, again, because the importance is on the process and making it meaningful and relevant to the community. So I think you'll probably hear from the folks at FAB that going through a particular process is not what's important. It's that you've gone through a process that does these things but ends up with a plan that is used and is a guiding document both for the health department and for the community is what we're going to be looking for. Something, not the plan that sits on the shelf that ideally followed a particular framework or process. So further borrowing from FAB's description of community and state health improvement plan, the plan itself in some form, again, of the community or state's choosing, is going to include community health priorities. It's going to include measurable objectives. It will have improvement strategies along with performance measures and measurable and timeframe targets for the achievement of those measures. It will identify needed policy changes to achieve the objectives and the vision of the plan. It will identify the individuals and or organizations with responsibility for those strategies, again, building in a measurable a measure of accountability and ownership for what's been put into the plan and the plan's implementation. And it will include outcomes and indicators to monitor progress over time. Other considerations for FAB is that there is a link between state and community plans, so that in some way there is an understanding each of the other's plan and what the relationship between the two may be, or at least an understanding of why there are differences if differences exist. FAB has indicated that these could be multiple documents that come together to make a comprehensive plan and that they are dated within the past 3 to 5 years. So community-driven health improvement planning, it gets to a goal that we all share in public health and our many of our partners as well, and that's to improve health outcomes. So we're doing this to improve the health status in our communities and in our state. So there is some guidance about how we can do that and be successful. And I cite a few sources here that point us to what can help us make a difference. What we learn is that community leadership and ownership is critical, that those community health collaborations that are most effective are those that have valued community leadership and have made a point to ensure that there's ownership of the issues that are identified in the plans that are implemented. Further, an effective process is one that is going to leverage all available assets and resources. So it's going to focus on a few critical priorities that that are mutually agreed upon and shared, and then identify the resources that are available to address those and use them well. And those are the situations where we're going to be more likely to see a collaboration over time that can, in fact, really make a difference and realize health improvement outcomes. I like to think of it as it's really no different than any effective or functional relationship. In my family, if we set an objective to make a new purchase or to do something different, that's really going to happen best if we all agree that it should in fact happen and we all identify what we have to contribute to it and then make plans to move accordingly and check in to make sure we're making the progress that we want to make. So not to oversimplify, but I think if we do look close to home, we can see that some of the very factors that work to make those close to home relationships effective also work to make our community partnerships effective. One more point on that. In terms of sustainability over the long term, there is also some evidence to suggest that where the roles and responsibilities are clearly defined, that does help in assuring a forward progress. So for some communities, that may mean informal agreements, but the more formal agreements, whether it's memoranda of understanding or whether it's actually formalized bylaws and structure, can be very helpful in maintaining the coalition or collaborative structure over time. So people understand their role, their relationships, what the expectations are, and sometimes putting that on paper can help it have a life beyond the people in the room, because often in community relationships, the people in the room do change through attrition or job changes or what have you. So just to make a quick note about that. So some of the benefits of a collaborative process, no matter what the model, so whatever model may be used, these are some of the benefits that can be realized. Meeting the assessment requirements of multiple partners, as Lindsay pointed out earlier, there are different drivers for conducting community health assessment and improvement plans right now. So different partners have different reasons, different needs to be in the room together. But as my grandmother said very early on when it came to doing dishes, many hands make light work. So that is certainly possible when it comes to community health assessment as well. That having the multiple partners together to identify, we all need to do an assessment, let's figure out what pieces are important to all of us, and we all contribute to come up with one assessment that will help us all move forward. That can certainly be a benefit of working together. Improve working relationships and systems efficiencies. Through working together, it's possible to build trust. And that in building trust, it becomes easier to be more efficient. If I know someone, I have a relationship with them, I have a data need, maybe it's easier to get that agreement about data sharing because of that working together that we have, thereby realizing some efficiencies within our system. Increasing ownership of problems, realizing that immunization for flu, the flu vaccine, isn't just an issue or a problem that can be or should be owned by the health department, but in fact, schools who care a whole lot about attendance in the public school system, that they own part of that too. So opening up school doors for immunization days can be a shared problem and a shared ownership of a problem that both can realize an outcome from. This is one example of many that can happen when we start sharing the problems that we identify in communities. Minimizing duplication of effort, that's part of the efficiencies that can be realized, but coming together around or through a process like the National Public Health Performance Standards Program, where each partner gets to talk about what they're doing to contribute to essential services, the opportunity to identify where there may be more contributions in some essential services than the community actually needs. So we're both doing the same thing. Maybe one of us could do less of this and take on more of something else, thereby minimizing some of the duplicative effort, and we can shift resources to areas of growth and opportunity. Better using resources. Focus through a community health improvement plan can be identifying those things that are important to the collective, important to the collaborative, and then leveraging those resources in the community or state to address them. So picking a few things, focusing on them intently to make a difference. So I think one of the themes that we're beginning to hear from different disciplines where collaboration occurs to make changes in systems is that ability to focus well on a few things and leverage resources can really make a difference. So just a few benefits of a collaborative process. And then I want to wrap up by saying the three take-home messages throughout, so maybe you hear this in what I'm saying, but also in what Lindsay and Julia will have to offer, is that the community engagement is key. Community engagement is key to beginning the process, and it's key to getting through it and continuing it. So it's important at every stage. There is an opportunity to utilize an existing framework that emphasizes community engagement, so whether it's mobilizing for action through planning and partnerships, whether it's the Association for Community Health Improvement, the United Way, or others that offer a framework, they do emphasize community engagement. There's not a need to create something new. Existing frameworks do exist. And that establishing a structure that is inclusive of vision, mission, goals, objectives, operating structures, communication plans can go a long way in ensuring that the work gets off the ground and gets taken to the next step. So I think with that, I will say thank you and turn it over to Julia.